are coming into the bathroom and some friends are running a train on a girl inside the stall.
Yeah.
Right. Sixth grade.
So you're telling me that there was a few guys essentially raping a girl in a bathroom.
It was like almost like a hockey fight. You see hockey guys and just like, bam, bam, bam. There was just so much blood.
I think everything changed once the Mexican mafia issued a green light for all Mexican gangs to kill off the black gangs.
Where are you from? Didn't say nothing. Pop, pop, pop. And it wasn't like anything like this. So as he's trying to run away, homeboy caught him with the golf club, bam, right in his head. Get close to him so I could swing on him. And then just like that, wham, I got hit from the side.
Oh.
I come down to a knee. Guy gets up behind me. He's got me in a rear naked.
Oh.
He's already got the... So he's got his legs already like this on top. Yeah.
What the...
Okay. On the ground. And I'm going in and out. And as I'm going in and out, I'm looking down. And all I see is a dude just like...
But just he was stabbing you?
Yeah.
Bro.
Super precise though. He just... And so when he hit me the first time, my body jerked and I turned around while the guy was on me.
Yeah.
And then I felt something in the back of my leg. Oh. So he got me in the back of my leg.
Dang.
And I turned back around again. And then he goes right back in the stomach again. So I could hear a girl screaming, "You're gonna kill him! You're gonna kill him!" And it was in and out. Kill him! Kill him!
Hey, we motivating the nation, gonna set the foundation, spreading positive knowledge, the crucial conversation. This goes farther than just feeding you motivation. As I let you in the basis of my operation, with such intensity, I say what I mean. The world is going crazy, man, I think it's time to intervene. Planting nuggets of wisdom till the cup overflows. Dive deep into the war room that I feel below. Out the Golden State, baby, yeah, I'm shining like a pro. I'll rise for the Will Rodriguez show. Let's go.
Episode 2. I think we're gonna hit record right now in a few seconds, bro. We're ready now. You ready for this podcast?
I'm ready.
How ready are you, though?
I've been ready.
You want to do some push-ups before we get started?
Get
the blood going.
Pump them up.
Woo! Come on, let's go. Episode numero dos of Crucial Conversations with Will Rodriguez. You guys already know Anthony, the man, the myth, the legend, Anthony Steele. Say holla.
What's going on, guys? Excited to be here. Excited to, you know, to tell my story.
But before they do,
okay,
what should they do?
Oh, yes. Make sure you go ahead and like this.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and click that notification bell, right? So you can be notified for the next episodes that are going to be coming out. And even share it too. I mean, if it has an impact in some way, maybe it could help maybe a family member, friend, cousin, sister, second cousin, I mean, whoever it may be.
So send to everybody.
Send it to everybody. If you feel like it's something that's in there that's being able to impact.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. With that being said, let's get started, man. So Anthony, you're from Oceanside, San Diego, essentially, right?
Yep.
You moved out here to Texas, but let's go back. We want to hear about your story. Tell us about your upbringing. Tell us how that was like.
Yeah. You know, I think, I was born in Tustin, California, right? And those first 9 years, I grew up out there. My mom is white, so she was Irish, Dutch, Dane, French. And then my father, African-American. And so, I mean, just that, right? Just like being black and being white, especially in those times. I was born in 81. I kind of think back on my parents and how they kind of really trailblazed things at that time. I went to actually a Christian school.
Okay.
Started off at Maranatha Christian Academy and Calvary Chapel with Pastor Chuck Smith. And, I remember just those young days of actually being at that school. I was only in, I made it to, started there in kindergarten.
Okay.
Right. And then went into first grade. Right. But then they held me back and I had to go to pre-first. So I was actually the first, first kid to teach. Yeah, so it's like a middle. It's like a mixture of first grade and kindergarten.
Is that even legal now?
Ah, man, I couldn't even tell you.
Wow.
But they had to create something for me because I was just super rambunctious, right? Like
you
I was
should make that into a shirt, bro.
Free first. But the energy and, you know, at the time I didn't know, I wasn't diagnosed essentially with ADHD, but I was like, I was a kid that had just had a lot of energy.
Yeah.
I couldn't sit in my seat and I was constantly moving, constantly like, you know, very kinesthetic, very like touchy and things of that nature. And I just remember I used to, you know, like pull on girls' hair, not loud, not hard, but just like, I'm here, you know, and, you know, like grab their shoulders.
Yeah.
And, you know, at a young age, I mean, there was, you know, obviously an infatuation with girls.
Yeah.
Right. But then also too, I would get into fights, you know, and so I find myself consistently in and out of,
Were you fighting because you're like anger issues or you just wanted to have,
I just wanted to have fun. But I just felt like I was more of an outcast essentially. Okay. And so kids didn't really know how to have fun with me too as well.
Why is that?
I think because of my energy, I was just super energetic, like, you know, and you didn't know what I was going to do. How I was going to do it. It wasn't anything where I was just trying to cause, I wasn't trying to like cause friction or be mischievous. It was just more so like, hey, you know what? I wanted to, I guess, test everybody.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah. And so, you know, in and out of the principal's office. Right. And then my family, actually my mom had found out about this place called Oceanside and kind of like this, I guess this small kind of, beach town essentially. Mm-hmm. And, they had found a little bit of real estate out there and it was their first home that I think that they were going to buy essentially. Mm-hmm. And the home was, $70,000 right there off of Mission and Old Grove, where the 76 highway didn't have a 76 highway at that time. And so they ended up making the move.
Yeah.
And but we were still commuting back and forth, right? Oof. So we moved to Oceanside. I remember just, you know, waking up around 6 o'clock and then we would take about an hour to get back to Costa Mesa, hour and 15 minutes. On the freeway.
That's a long drive.
And, you know, my dad, worked for the telephone company and we would just drive down there. I would end up going to school and then he would take me back home at the end of the day. And so, yeah, man, I think, you know, that's kind of how it all kind of transpired from, you know, that. But then what ended up happening was, is I ended up moving and going to another Christian school, right? Called Tri-City Christian School, okay. Out in Vista.
Got it.
And, you know, being like really like maybe three out of, there was one other person and her name was Tamika. Mm-hmm. Tamika was black, right? And, you know, me being black and white, right? Like we were really the only kids of color at that school, right? And so, I mean, kids are kids.
Yeah.
Right. And I could take it with the best of them. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, we kind of make fun of each other and, you know, kid would tell me, well, hey, your skin looks like the color of poop, you know? And I go, oh, well, yours looks like piss. Right. You know, your skin. Right? So we just kind of go back and forth, but I would, you know, consistently, you know, get in trouble there too, as well. But I had friends that were, there in my neighborhood. And they were going to all the local elementary schools, local junior highs, right? Even some kids I, you know, knew from high school or knew that they were high schoolers going to the high schools. And I really love sports. Football was like a really, really, you know, big thing for me. And, you know, we would always play like inside in the green belt.
Yeah.
Right? And I was always like one of the top kids on the green belt. And we would start off early. You know, Saturday morning. And I don't know if you remember, but the big bike back then was the Huffies.
I remember those.
And you know, we would start off early. So it'd be like, you know, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning. I have all my buddies come over my house and we would put like little cards on the spokes to make it sound like it was a motorcycle. Right. And I have one buddy sitting on the top they'd be sitting on the top of the handlebars and we'd be riding and he'd just be like,
yeah, yeah.
You're just squeaking, squeaking, squeaking. And we had this huge green belt and we used to go out there and we used to play football. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of other kids that would come from all different mm-hmm. areas of, you know, just kind of like the neighborhoods that we were mm-hmm. at. And man, I mean, we would just have, you know, it'd be fun, but we would just have battles, oof, you know, and I got this guy, you know, we'd stand in lines and, you know, you never wanted to get picked last, yeah. you know, and, you know, fortunately I had some games, so I would always get picked like one of the number one guys, yeah, you know, yeah. and I would play running back, yeah. weaving in and out and you know, we just having a solid time, a mm-hmm. great time. And, you know, play all the way from, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning, all the way up until, you know, nighttime. And wow. then I hear my dad at the mm-hmm. end of the day, mm-hmm. he did that whistle. I knew yeah. it was time to come home.
Yeah. Right? Yep,
the street
yep.
lights were on. And so, yeah, I mean, I just remember my childhood just being very active.
Yeah.
Very energetic.
Yeah.
You know, I think a major transition was when I actually was able to talk my parents out of getting me out of that school, right? The mm-hmm. Christian school.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of bullying in the Christian mm-hmm. school.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be Christian. Yeah. So why was that taking place? Mm-hmm. And was that issue not addressed?
No, yeah, you know, that's a great question. Yeah, you know, I think it started to become addressed essentially, mm-hmm. okay. right? And my dad was always really, really good at addressing things.
Okay.
He was really, really good at coming to the school, mm-hmm. talking to the teachers, talking to the principal, really sticking up for me, mm-hmm. essentially. I think, I mean, I don't know how taboo it was mm-hmm. to have ADD or ADHD yeah. at that time, but I felt like, you know, maybe with that diagnosis around that time, like in the early 90s, mm-hmm. You know, teachers didn't really know how to handle that.
Right.
There wasn't really any IEPs, right? Mm-hmm. Where you would just kind of be taken out of class mm-hmm. and go into another class where you can maybe focus longer, take a little bit more time on tests, mm-hmm. right? Or kind of just kind of figure out, you right. know, essentially who you are. And so, you know, I think not having that, it turned into teachers really kind of questioning me. Right. Kids questioning me, like, okay. you know, and I remember, one of the teachers, I won't say her name, but I can almost remember it like it was yesterday. And she said, Anthony, she said, are you stupid?
Hmm.
Now, when I look back on it, what I see now was someone that was just simply overwhelmed.
Hmm.
Was at a point of just kind of like really no return.
Right.
I wasn't just the only kid. It was all the other mm-hmm, kids too mm-hmm. as well. But I was the one that actually was there. And yeah. it was like, are you stupid? You know? But at that moment, the way I felt, it was painful. My heart dropped. Kids were laughing. I really didn't know how to respond. I couldn't answer. You know, I just kind of sat there.
Did you make that part of your identity?
I didn't feel like I was stupid,
mm-hmm.
but I felt like I was like maybe behind a bit.
Okay.
Right. And I think that that's kind of how really the school system, I think that was the only way that they could handle me.
Yeah.
Essentially. But I remember coming back home and, you know, I was really distraught. You know, my dad was like, well, what's going on? What's up?
Hey, yeah,
what's
yeah.
going on? And, you know, I told them, you know, we were all in class and, you know, there was, you know, a lot of just kind of like hustle and bustle yeah. going on in class. And the teacher got upset at me and the teacher called me stupid.
Mm.
He said, oh, okay. So he came to school, the next day and, you know, I never was called stupid again. In fact, that teacher was always nice to me after that.
Right? Of course, of course.
I don't know what happened yeah, or how, yeah. what transpired.
She's thinking about her pension at that point. <That's right. laughs> I went there.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So how did that change into like your next chapter? Mm-hmm. I know there's a couple of things that changed because you brought up in a good home, mm-hmm. in a Christian home, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So where did that change? When did that change?
when it changed, as far as when you're saying, like, as far as the Christian home.
Yeah, my, yeah, everything kind of changed, like, into thoughts. A different direction.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I was a latchkey kid.
Mm-hmm.
And a latchkey kid would be more described as, I mean, it's one of those kids, especially back in the times when, you know, when I was coming up, it was like you had this, maybe it was, what would we say for shoes? Like, it'd be shoelaces. You tie the shoelaces together and then you'd have your key right here, right? Because your parents, I mean, worked anywhere between 10, 12, 13 hour shifts.
Right.
Parents went to, my parents worked hard, right? So they went to work early in the morning and they come back till late at night.
Wow.
So really what was bringing me up was my surroundings.
Oof.
Right. And so, you know, one of the things that, you know, I was really, really started to kind of peek over the fence essentially, was, you know, trying to figure out like, okay, hey, after I got out of that Christian school and I talked my parents to get me into another school, they had got me into an elementary, and this was when I was in sixth grade. This was back when you know, sixth grade was part of elementary. And it was really in one of the toughest, I would say, elementaries in Oceanside. A lot of these individuals that I grew up with that were friends have, you know, went in, prison for murder, burglary, you know, trafficking drugs. Some of them have made it to the highest pinnacles of different types of gangs and organizations. You know, others of them have led on level 4 yards, you know, like Pelican Bay, you know, Folsom, you know, these types of areas. And so, you know, but they're just young kids at that time. We're all young kids. And I can remember just going into, like, you know, going to the bathroom and going in there and just seeing the activity. It was just totally different from the Christian school. I was just, I didn't even really know how to take it.
What kind of activities are we talking about?
Gang activity.
Oh, gang activity.
Yes,
okay.
Gang activity. I mean, we're talking about small baby voices, but already gangs, full-fledged, you know, ready. You have one individual, I mean, he was from a Mexican gang, right? That was in the Valley area. And, you know, I mean, he's already grown all the way to a point where now, you know, he's gotten status in the highest part of the Mexican gangs, right? And I won't go too much deeper into detail on that. But then also too, you know, African-Americans there, right? That were Crippin. And then you had Samoans that were Bloods, you know? Now, these kids weren't really like fighting with each other essentially. Now, sometimes you have fist fights that would break out and all those types of things, but it wasn't like they were mortal enemies. I mean, these kids were still spending the night at each other's houses. They were still trying to figure things out.
Still innocent.
Innocent to a degree.
Yeah.
But the backgrounds that these kids were coming from were very, very, very tough backgrounds, right? Where, you know, dad wasn't there, perhaps. Mom wasn't there. They're living with grandma and grandpa.
Or second generation, third generation.
Or second, third generation. They've already seen, you know, death. They've already seen the drugs. They've seen the alcohol. They're already smoking. They're already drinking, these types of things. So I'm already seeing this stuff in the bathroom or coming into the bathroom. And, you know, some friends are running a train on a girl inside the stall. Right? Sixth grade. You know, and you're just like,
it's crazy.
Whoa. So you can't unsee certain things, especially at a young, a young age. And so seeing those things and kind of taking them in, it was just, it was a lot. It was really a lot.
For me. You're telling me that there was a few guys essentially raping a girl in a bathroom. That's what's happening.
I wouldn't. I mean, I think it was. I think it was mutual, but it probably could have been rape. I mean, this was. This was like a train.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but just not. It was just crazy, man. You know, just being a being not. I wasn't a part of that, but seeing it.
Yeah. And, of course.
And so that type of impression, that put upon me, like, man, who am I going to really hang out with? Right. like especially going into the junior high.
Uh-huh.
Because the junior high was that was, you know, there was a lot of sides being picked
right.
at the particular junior high that yeah. I had.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you already had a war that was going on in the high school. So everything that was coming down from the high school
mm-hmm.
was coming down to the actual junior high.
Yeah.
You know? And so once I had gotten to that junior high, yes, I was still in sports. Yes, I was playing football. And you know, a lot of these guys were also playing football with mm-hmm. me too as well.
Okay.
And I mean, just kind of going back to that, but I just remember like, you know, my first couple of weeks of like Pop Warner practice, mm-hmm. this was like football. And it was interesting because I had came in there and I had never really worn pads or anything. And this is where I'm just kind of playing out on the sand lot free of pads and all of that. And so I remember after one of the first practices, right, the coach, you know, had us basically stand up and tell us, you know, like what position we were going to play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had asked, you know, Ryan, and Ryan was like, yeah, I'm going to play quarter. I want to play mm-hmm. quarterback and receiver. And then Demetrius, they had asked him, he's like, I want to play quarterback. And, you know, Sean, I'm going to play running back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were just going down that list of guys and saying, Anthony, what are you going to play? I was like, yeah, I'm going to play running back. And, you know, a couple of guys look back at me and they're like, who is this guy? You know what I'm saying? And I think they took it upon themselves because I was a new guy mm-hmm. and a lot of these other kids were coming up through the actual ranks together that they had created a nucleus and they had took it upon themselves to really take it out on me. And I mm-hmm. just remember, man, putting the pads on, I felt all weird, like having the helmet on and I get all itchy. And then I put on the shoulder pads and they would be like clapping everywhere. Yeah. I could never really get comfortable. My pants, I can never, you know, my belt would always get loose and my mm-hmm. pants would almost be filling. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't know how to really get comfortable. And then when I get in there, I mean, I was getting hit every way, but sideways. I mean, and I remember one day when we actually were coming home after practice and my dad, you know, a blue collar worker had a, you know, an athletic background, really worked for everything that mm-hmm. he earned, you know, he earned everything that he had done. Right. And so, I remember coming home and we were coming right off of Crouch, mm-hmm. from Lincoln, junior high. That's where the practices were held. And we were coming down there and we're coming off Oceanside Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And I remember kind of like my heart beating because I was at that point, I had made up in my mind that I was going to tell my dad that I was going to quit football mm-hmm. and that I had another plan that I was mm-hmm. going to, you know, go into another sport like mm-hmm. baseball. And I thought that he would go for it. And you know, as we were coming down El Camino Real, we took a ride on Mesa and we're driving down Mesa as we're driving down there, my dad was just kind of, there's a little bit of silence and he mm-hmm. kind of took it in. He said, after that, he said, son, he said, the Stills, the last name you have, we don't quit.
Whew. Powerful. So,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I remember that hit me. He said, what we're going to do is you're going to finish out this year.
Yeah.
And then you reassess. Mm. And if you don't want to play anymore, it's completely fine.
So powerful.
But you're going to finish out this year.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like the seasoning that you have from a parent, you mm-hmm. know, and I was very fortunate to have that in my father.
Yeah.
And I believe that my father was a big reason why I never really got jumped into gangs mm-hmm. because I actually, although he was always working, mm-hmm. there was a respect level for a man mm-hmm. that was taking care of me. I felt like that was there.
Okay.
Where I look at other friends.
Yeah.
That didn't have their father.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, it was much more easier for them to get caught up into the stuff. And so, about the fifth or sixth game, I started to really kind of catch on.
Yeah,
the pads were starting to feel a little bit better. The helmet, I was able to like kind of tighten it up a little bit more. And you know, I got through that season. And hence to say, you know, football ended up becoming a something that was of tremendous value for me, you know, kind of coming up.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So that was that. You know, take me to like, you know, around high school now, acing high school. Like, how was that transition like leaving high school?
Okay. So just high school in general?
And kind of towards the end of high school and then transition out of high school?
Man. Yeah. I mean, towards the end of high school, I mean, it was interesting because, by that time, you know, it was, you know, Dickies, mm-hmm. Chuck's, Cortez.
Okay.
You know, white pro club shirt,
mm-hmm.
You know, blue Dickies,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean?
For us, it was the Levi's, the,
right,
and the Dickies 501s, as well. 501s, yeah. Yeah.
And it was thick too, as well, because when you like look over, like there was that at the high school, you had where the athletes kind of hung out,
mm-hmm.
right? And the athletes kind of hung out under like this big tree.
Yeah.
And then right across from the athletes, you had, they were called like the rebels.
Yeah.
Essentially, they dressed like greasers.
Mm-hmm.
And then across from there at the 200 building were the essays. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's where you're seeing like, you know, Ben Davis, and mm-hmm. they had the pants all the way up to the stomach. I mean, they had the creases.
These were the 80s, early 90s?
These are like the late 90s.
Late 90s. Okay.
Late 90s.
Got it.
And, you know, they were turned up. And then mm-hmm. you had the Samoans that were over by like the kind of like the lunch area,
mm-hmm.
and you see like a sea of red there.
Yeah.
And then you'd have like the Crips kind of like off in the corner over there too, as well. And also too, man, I mean, you had, the white boys as well that were turned up.
Wow.
You know, so there was it was like a kind of like a mixture.
Yeah.
Of a almost like a cocktail,
yeah,
right. That was definitely brewing. But you know, kind of, you know, making that transition, you know, and kind of getting out of that latter part of high school. I mean, I had a 1.83 GPA, right? The only time I had my grades up was during football season. Mm-hmm. Once football season was done, my grades would just totally collapse. I really cheated my way mm-hmm. essentially through high school. I can never really understand like why I needed to learn about, you know, the soil and dirt. Like mm-hmm. I never, or like with earth science, right? Mm-hmm. For example, there's nothing against scientists or anything like that. But like, I was wondering like, what type of significance does this have for me when I'm out amongst life?
Yeah.
I've never had to bring up, you know, talking about like biology, or I never had to bring up talking about, like, I thought the only class that really was of significance to me was mm-hmm. like math, right? Because it was counting
makes
money.
Sense. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like me sitting in and really kind of like doing well in those classes, I just didn't see the value in it. Now when I look back, I saw a lot of value in the kids that probably felt the same way that I felt.
Yeah.
They still pulled off 3.0s, 4.0s, right? Like they were just going to make it happen.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah.
You know, it was definitely like, you know, really towing the line
mm-hmm.
as far as like hanging around
mm-hmm.
the gangs.
Yeah.
And you know, playing the sport too as well.
Yeah, yeah. So you're hanging around with the gangsters, right? Partying and everything.
Yeah.
But you also were playing sports, right?
Correct.
Man, that's a bad combination. Did you get into any trouble because of that?
Oh yeah, man. I got into lots of trouble. I mean, we would always like, you know, on the weekends we go to the, you know, store and we do beer runs and things of that nature. I remember, you know, one time, this was actually, it's a little bit after high school essentially. But there was another gang that was out there more towards the beach, essentially, an SA gang. And, there was a lot of friction mm-hmm. in between them. And then, a gang that I used to hang around a lot called West Side Crips.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all were at the beach
mm-hmm.
essentially. And, my buddy, that now he's on about, he's on a 20 year stretch so far in prison. But he had gotten a fight with this kid and we were at this is like two separate times at the beach, right? So we were right there off of Tyson mm-hmm. Street in Tyson. They, if you know that, right, they mm-hmm. got a park there.
Right.
We used to always kind of hang out in front of mm-hmm. the park and, you know, we'd be all, you know, dressed up Dickies and, you know, kind of like gang attire. Mm-hmm. And, it was like around, I don't know, it was like around 4, 5, or 6 o'clock. And it was like 7 or 8 of our friends that were out there just kind of hanging out. And my buddy, this was about a couple of months earlier. Mm-hmm. He got jumped really bad at a party Oof. By this individual. In the Valley area. And wouldn't you know, while we're all hanging out, this individual, he was with his dad and then he had his, he was sitting in the passenger seat. And this guy is now doing life in prison too, by the way. Mm. And then you have, his, a friend, maybe another worker that was back there. And they were there at the end of their day, maybe doing construction yeah. or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's driving by. And my buddy was like, what's up? Mm. And the dude was like, oh, what's up? Mm. I was like, is he going to really come back? So there's a bathroom right there, mm-hmm. right there. And he has tells his dad, go ahead and park. So they park right there in the handicap. Ugh. And I'm just seeing all this thing happen. And he comes out, you know what I mean? And, you know, he puts on like his gloves,
yeah, yeah.
kinda, you know, the fighting gloves.
Yeah,
know,
fighting
gloves. Those are there, like football gloves, right?
Yeah.
Everybody had them, the rider. They call them riders.
The riders, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he put them on. My buddy's just sitting there, right? And they come up and they start kind of like, you know, bantering back and forth. And my buddy acts like he, you know, is like, ah, oh, no, I ain't nothing. And then he goes,
oh,
bam, woo, cracks him. And the dude, like, I mean, it's just like he, really was knocked out on his feet.
Wow.
And my buddy, just for like a split second, kind of, he felt good about it, yeah. right? But he didn't really kind of go in for the kill. So he kind of did a half kick.
Uh-huh.
And he tried to kick him in his face. And it almost, it was kind of like it was kicked him like up here and yeah. then down on the chest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was enough for him to stand back up.
Oh.
And then they just started trading blows. Bam, bam, bam. So I'm just sitting there. I'm like, man, should I jump him? I'm like, all these things are coming to my mind. And so I was like, boom, I looked over at his friend. We mm-hmm. locked eyes. And then, you know, now we're getting him up. And then now his friend's just kind of running around
mm-hmm.
and I'm trying to swing on him and I can't catch him because he's running around. And then my buddy, you know, my buddy Ronnie, which he's done a lot of different types of jail stints. It's just it's so many friends that have right. done prison stints. But Ronnie is like running up on the side of them. And so we're trying to jump them and yeah. all this type of stuff. All this was while this happening is that they're just trading blows.
Oh.
And they were, it was just like, it was like almost like a hockey fight. You yeah. see a hockey guys and just like, bam, mm-hmm, bam, mm-hmm, bam. Mm-hmm. And there was just so much blood.
Oh.
Right. I mean, both of their nose were broke, eyes, I mean, all just split, everything mm-hmm. like that. So the fight was done. And that dude, that, you know, he's doing life now, essentially. I mean, he's definitely was a brave heart, right? Mm-hmm. Because we had came in the bathroom and he's mm. like cleaning himself up and I'm in the bathroom there too with him. It's funny how that all kind of transpired, right? Yeah. And you know, I was talking amongst him and I said, yeah, I'll see you again.
Mm.
He's like, yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to see you again while his nose is all busted and everything.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I'm like, wow, this guy is really with it. So the next time I see him, I see him on the 4th of July. Mm. The 4th of July in Oceanside Beach, when we used to have it down on the beach.
Back in the days.
It was
turned up.
It was turned up. That was like where all the gangs would come down and there would be scraps.
If you're from Oceanside or San Diego, remember when it was popping in Oceanside, leave a comment. You got to share with another O-Sider.
Right? Share.
O-Sider, no side, right?
Put it in the comment, man. And I mean, wow. There's like stabbing. I mean, I remember wow. a buddy, he got stabbed there really, really bad. You know, other buddies getting jumped. And, you know, I was with the, you know, it's kind of hanging out with everybody, mm-hmm. kind of running everybody. And it would just start off really, really early. And some of my friends, white friends, they were called the Suicidals back in mm-hmm, the day. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they start off early and then, mm-hmm. you know, they get as many fights as they could on the strip. And they would always try to find people that were like, not from the city
mm-hmm.
and just be like, hey, what's up? And
you know, get busy.
Not even, yeah, just get busy.
Yeah.
And my buddy, Deans at the time, He's really down, man. And really, now when I see him, I mean, just really, really good man, mm-hmm. hard worker, loves his family.
That's awesome.
But man, I'll tell you what, man, back in the day, I mean, he was really turned up, and I remember seeing him. He was like, "Hey, Steele, what's going on, man?" I was like, "What's up, bro?" I was like, "Man, you got blood all over your shirt. What's going on?" He's like, "Yeah, I'm on my third fight of the day, man.
Third fight of the day.
Oh my God, what's going on with these guys, man?" And, you know, it was just really interesting. And so it was like, I remember seeing that same individual, mm-hmm. right? But now he was like, it was like later on in the day, and he was hanging out with, a gang. And they were walking towards mm-hmm. us. And right when I seen him immediately, I was like, "What's up?" He's like, "What's up?" Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, "Oh, let's go." So I'm walking up towards him. And we were talking to each other because mm-hmm. we're like, "Hey, we didn't want to fight down on the strip because mm-hmm. the police were there. We're going to go up to the top, right?" Mm-hmm. And so I had a few of my buddies from the west side and things of that nature. And he had all of his homies there too as well, a bunch of SAs, right? So I'm walking side by side with them, and we're just like talking amongst each other, you know, cussing at each other. And I'm like, "I can't wait. You know, I'm going to get that get back from my homeboy and all that type of stuff." And he's like, "Yeah, I'm sure you are, right?" And so as we're walking, my buddy was like, "Hey, is that dude have a gun?" And so there was an SA behind me.
Whoa.
Maybe about 120 pounds soaking wet. Mm. And he was sitting there. I mean, he's walking, and he was just very like nervous, probably tweaking.
Yeah.
But now when I look back on it, he was speaking himself up to pull the gun and blow my head off.
That's very common.
And he's just like kind of like talk, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I looked back over at him. I don't know what it was. I know it was the Lord that, you know, saved me in that position. But I told him, I was like, "You gonna shoot me, homie?" You know what I mean? And I think that I don't know if he was scared of that. Yeah. I think it was just more so he was just kind of like, "Dang," I think it may have made him think like, "There's a lot of people out here. I might have to do a lot." I don't know what he thought.
Thank God
he wasn't feeling like he was a killer at that moment.
Oof.
So he just kind of like, boom. But my other buddy that was there, he had a heat too.
Hmm.
So he pulled out his heat, and he was like, "Hey,
let's go."
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so they were kind of, right? And so once we had gotten up to the top,
mm-hmm.
there was, and the fight never really, really occurred mm-hmm. because there was a lot of, now it was like, okay, there's going to be gunplay that's going to mm-hmm. be going on.
Right.
And there was a lot of argument and fights going back and forth. And, so yeah, that was a really, really interesting day.
Very intense.
Yeah. There's unfortunately a lot of those different types of moments,
man. Talk to us about a close call. Like an experience that you had where maybe you're in a very very vulnerable place mm-hmm. where there's maybe some fights involved or mm-hmm. you know, something that happened that was, you know,
yeah,
outside of the norm.
100%. And you already know, Will, like growing up in Oceanside, there's always a chip on our shoulder.
For sure.
Especially if it's going to another city, right?
100%.
It's like, you know, if people ask you where you're from, there's always that kind of like, "I'm from Oceanside."
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I'm from North County
yeah.
or I'm from San Diego. It's like, no, I'm from Oceanside.
Right.
And I remember the day like it was yesterday, and we would always like go down to LA mm-hmm. essentially. And kind of just kind of check that place out, you know, go all different parts like Watts,
mm-hmm.
Compton, you know, I mean, Crenshaw,
yeah.
you know, all these different types of areas, which probably shouldn't have went down to. but my buddy, he was on a fourth waiver. So mm-hmm. fourth waiver essentially means is that like anytime a police officer knows you're on fourth waiver, they can check you at any moment, mm-hmm. right? They can. Yeah. Take you out. They can, you know, pull your pants off if they want mm-hmm. to make sure that yeah. they find drugs or guns or anything like that. Buddy was in the gang for already a long time by that time. I mean, he started off with gangs probably about 10 or 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we're about, you know, I would say about 20, 25, 26.
Mm-hmm.
And so before we had went down to LA that day, we were going to go pick up some friends and things of that nature. So it was right there off of Oceanside Boulevard And then there's, if you go up Oceanside Boulevard to where Emerald's at, that mm-hmm. light essentially, right? Yeah. I think that might be Thunder and Emerald, mm-hmm. right? But there's a train tracks.
Yeah.
And once you know it, woo, mm-hmm. right? Now, two buddies, one of them was from Rolling 60s mm-hmm. in LA. The other one was from West Side out here. Mm-hmm. They both have heat, mm-hmm. right? Oh my gosh. And this is already just early in the day. Mm-hmm. And I'm already kind of a little intoxicated too, as yeah. well, because I love to drink. Mm-hmm. And, police are coming up. My heart's just like, now I'm not worried that I'm going to be taking him, but I'm more worried about my friend. I'm like, oh. Hey man, like just got out.
Yeah.
Just, you know, picked him up, you know, yeah. just catching up and all this type of stuff. Childhood friend. So the police come, but my other buddy, I don't know, maybe if it was a rookie cop, I don't know what it was. Maybe mm-hmm. he didn't read the, you know, reports or whatever, the fourth waiver or mm-hmm. whatever. But my buddy, my other buddy that was driving was very versed in the law. Mm-hmm. And so he knew, like, they, you know, he had already made up in his mind, like, you cannot check my car. Mm-hmm. But very, very calm, very mm-hmm. cool, very yeah. collective, super smart, uh-huh. right? And so as he was, you know, speaking to him, you know, the cop was just kind of like, so the cop did take us all out of the car, mm-hmm. but we had no idea. They had put, you know, another way of saying the cuete, mm-hmm. right? They had put it under the seat, wherever they had put it, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so, the friend that was in the front, I mean, he was a fourth waiver. He's actually in prison right now too, as well. Yeah. But then the other one that's in the back, he was implicated in all murder, to later on.
Yeah.
Right. And he just gotten out. I think he did close to about 20 years
wow.
for that. But they, for whatever reason, they let us all back in the car. Mm-hmm. We all went back down. And so mm-hmm. we went to LA, and once we had gotten to LA, I was already drunk. I was drinking E&J, drinking mm-hmm. vodka, you know, on the car right there. I had it in like in a water bottle. Mm-hmm. And I was just feeling great. You know, mm-hmm. feeling good, nice and warm and everything. So we went into a hood where literally it was like a civil war, mm-hmm. essentially between these two gangs. These gangs had been killing each other.
Was it black on black?
Black
or
on black.
SA? Okay.
Black on black. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's called the Rolling 60s and the 8-Trade Gangsters. Mm. And they've had like this, I don't know, this inner civil war turmoil for years. And, you know, you murder one, we'll murder five right. of you, right?
Very common.
And yeah. it's like train tracks that kind of like, it's just nuts, right?
Yeah. A lot of black on black, brown on brown type of beef.
Big time.
All throughout Southern California. Doesn't make sense for me.
It was a little bit more different from Oceanside.
Yeah.
Because while you did have black on black, yeah. it wasn't so heavy. Mm-hmm. It was more black on Mexican, Mexican on black, yeah. right? Or Samoans would come with the Mexicans and they would get the blacks. But in LA, it was a little bit different. Yes, you did have that kind of friction, mm-hmm. but blacks and Mexicans still hung out with each other, mm. right? They would still break bread with each other, right? Mm. And you didn't really have that intimate or as bad as you had it more in Oceanside, essentially. Yeah.
I think everything changed once the Mexican mafia issued a green light for all Mexican gangs to kill off the black gangs. I think that's when it changed.
Yes.
But prior to that, I think they were mingling a little bit more.
That's mm. right. That's yep. absolutely right. And so, yeah, man. I mean, we ended up at a house rolling 60, and the dude's name was Crafty, but they had a big old party and everything like mm-hmm. that. And I just remember my buddy. I would look up to him, man. I mean, he was only about 5'7", 5'6", but mm-hmm. the heart of like just a gorilla, just like a brave heart. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Always ready, always heat, but he didn't even need the heat. He had it there for protection, yeah, obviously, yeah. but he was really scenario. Ready to scrap. I mean, yeah. he wasn't, because you in gangs, you had all different types of guys. You had guys that were just more like, you know, pimps, mm-hmm. players, hustlers, yeah. but they weren't really fighters.
Right.
And he had others that were like, hey, he's a shooter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For sure.
Wow. He ain't fighting. He's just shooting.
He's just shooting, right? He didn't want to fight, but he's going to shoot you, though.
Yeah.
But this guy was like very versed in all of it.
Ah.
He kind of took, but he was more so like a gangster.
You know what I mean? Okay.
And he actually, which was interesting, he kicked it with a lot of individuals from an area that you grew up in. Interesting because, you know, game recognizes game.
Yeah.
You see way past the color, right?
Of course.
You know, and he would tell me about a few homies from where you're at that were like, yeah, it was interesting seeing him hanging around them too as well. They'd be all cool with each other.
Yeah.
But, we got there. I just remember them like not hitting us up, but they're like, hey, where are you from? Where are you from? And my boy was like, from Oceanside, West Side, you know?
Yeah.
And we're massively outnumbered.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they could easily just turn real quick. Mm. Not everyone doesn't know everybody. We knew a couple of people there that we had brought there, but it was not like everyone would say, hey, these are, you know, these guys, right? And they'd be like, oh yeah, yeah, I know you. I know your homeboy, such and such. I was with them in the pen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the Oceanside, it was interesting how such a small city had already created a name for themselves in the penitentiary.
Absolutely.
And it was something of respect.
Yeah.
With these hoods in LA that were massive. We're talking about hundreds and thousands, right? Of individuals from gangs there too as well. So
yeah, 80s and 90s from understanding, it was very bloody in Oceanside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's an article that was published early 2000s maybe that called Oceanside the new Compton or something like that.
Yep.
Are you familiar with that article or no? I've seen it.
I know. I believe I know what you're saying. It was actually per capita had the most murders in the whole country at one point per capita.
Dang.
And that was in the early 90s.
That's crazy.
But they had these apartments. I know this is kind of off topic, but they had these apartments right there behind the drive-ins.
Mm-hmm.
Used to have apartments. They're no longer there anymore, right? But it was like it was actually a Crip apartments there.
Mm.
But you'd have like a lot of LA Crips and things that would go that would come there, and I mean, they wouldn't make it. They would smoke them, right? Mm-hmm. Just to have people understand, like, you're not going to come here, strong arm us, tell us what we need to do.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, LA is obviously, it's so huge, and they've spread all across the country as far as games. You talk about the blacks, the essays, right? I mean, you got essays in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But it started off with 18th Street in LA.
In LA.
Baldwin Park. I mean, it's crazy, right?
Yep.
You got Crips rolling 90s, rolling 60s, and they're out in Arkansas.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Yep.
But I think that they were attempting to do that maybe in Oceanside. I don't know all the details and the depth, but Oceanside was like, nah, we're doing our own thing here.
Yeah.
We're not going to be, you know, 18th Street rolling or whatever, you know, none of that stuff. Like,
we're not going to franchise in this.
We're not going to franchise over here. We're doing our own thing. Like, we really like we like you guys' style, but we're going to do our own thing.
Right,
they're like, well, no, it's going to be our style. It's like, okay, it is. Well, then you just go out in a bag, right? And that's kind of how it worked in the 90s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, I mean, just being at that party, I was having a great time. But I remember sitting on the front doorstep.
Yeah.
And it was probably about like five or six of us. And then my homeboy, he was out there, and this car pulls up, but there was a very long, long grass heading towards the front door, like a big front yard, essentially.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, like in the hoods out there, I mean, the grass is manicured. I mean, the homes are really, really nice. A lot of them, right? It's just nuts. But this individual, he's driving, and once again, we're in the middle of a civil war, right? It's right across train tracks, essentially. And so the alertness, like the antennas came up on my homeboy, and he's not even from their hood. I mean, we're an hour and a half away, you know, south.
Yeah.
But our north, I'm sorry. It is south, sorry, south. And he's like the only one that's really kind of thinking. And so this individual gets out the car. Immediately, my homeboy was like, where are you from? Dude didn't say anything. He said, if you don't say where you're from, like, he said it very quickly. And he didn't tell me the second time, essentially, like, I'm going to start busting.
Yeah.
Where are you from? Didn't say nothing. Pop, pop, pop. And it wasn't like anything like this. It was like,
he was trained.
Like, he was trained. Like, he was trying to, you know,
he's done it before.
We were like, what the heck?
It wasn't one of these, like, no, it was one of these, like, okay. Okay.
And all of a sudden, there's shooting going on. And I mean, I remember like bricks being hit. And I mean, it was just crazy. People running down the street.
Wow.
And I'm thinking we're in LA, essentially we're in a hood, and these individuals are trained killers.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking like these people jumping over the fence mm-hmm. are enemies, but I had no idea that it was actually people from the party.
Hmm.
So I'm like thinking I'm going to probably die. I don't know what I'm thinking. Right. So all I think is just swing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm punching and I'm trying to punch people and all this type of stuff.
Yeah, friendly fire.
And it was interesting, man. Like how that night played out, man. It was interesting how that all kind of played out.
That's
nuts. There's just a lot of close calls. I mean, I know even in Oceanside, I mean, we had this big we had an individual by the name of Sugar Free, a rapper.
Sugar Free.
Back
in the days. Sugar Free.
And my buddies from the Valley, man. They had arranged it at what was called the Show Palace.
Okay.
So the Show Palace was over there by the indoor swap meet mm-hmm. back in the day. And, you know, Sugar Free was coming there, but then you had all these other rappers that were mm-hmm. coming too mm-hmm. as well. And he was like the big one that was coming. And it was nuts, man. I mean, you had everybody from every hood out there in Oceanside.
Mm.
I mean, you had all the blood hoods that were out there,
mm-hmm.
all the Crips hoods, all the SA hoods, man. It was just like, it was crazy. And, you know, I mean, it was nuts how that whole night was mm-hmm. really starting to come together.
That's crazy. Because back in the days, we had how many hoods from black hoods? How many? Like maybe five or more?
Yeah.
Or more. Not so
you had,
more.
So you had West Side, Deep Valley Crip, Insane Crip Gang, Crook Mob Gangsters, East Side. So those are the four come to mind right now.
Okay. Yeah. Then we had. From the Mexican side, we had Center Street, Pozole. We have Mesa, Tri-City, Mid Valley at the time, right?
Mid Valley, yeah.
There's another small one in the Mid. Am I missing one? There's probably the smaller ones, but
yeah.
I think those are the big ones. Like
yeah,
the big three,
yeah.
Center Street, Pozole, Mesa, right?
Yeah.
Just that alone.
Yeah. And then you got the Blood Hoods, right? So you have Deep Valley Blood, and then you had Crook City Bloods.
Okay.
And then Tri-City.
Tri-City.
Now, Crooks and Tri-City, they had kind of like closed the, I guess you'd say like closed the papers on it. Mm-hmm. They weren't jumping anybody in.
Yeah.
But DVB was more of like the prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, I mean, you talk about every gang in Oceanside that you could think of was there,
ooh.
Man. And the Valley was the one that brought that all together. And they were the ones that were like, you know, manning it. So they were security.
Yeah,
they were doing security, all that inside of there. It was crazy. But then you had other individuals that were coming from LA.
Ooh.
So you had like blood hoods that were coming from LA.
Yeah.
And so it was already not a good mix.
Oh.
And one of the young, I was already, you know, drinking a lot too as well. And, One of the dudes from the Valley, he's maybe about 5'4", 5'5", 130 pounds soaking wet,
mm-hmm.
but just a rider.
Mm.
I mean, he was a rider. In fact, a rival hood attempted to kill him on many occasions,
mm-hmm.
but they had shot him in his chest and, you know, he had gotten mm-hmm. through all of those types of things as well. And he, you know, he's obviously doing things, a lot of things too, as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember him just kind of, this is just the story that I remember that I saw. Now there may be all different types of depictions of it because there's a lot of people that have talked about it since then. But this is what I saw is, you know, there was bloods there and all I could see him was kind of like looking up, like, you know, and like talking to the blood. And then, people just start fighting, right?
Mm.
Now, one of my other friends, was there too as well. He was from another Crip hood. Now, there's shooting that's going on now mm-hmm. too as well. So people start running in from the parking lot.
Yeah,
someone got shot in their foot, and then someone in some of the parking lot, and people are fighting, right? So I'm running into the parking lot too as well, trying mm-hmm. to get away, and now I'm heads up with the blood. And we're just, you know, going at it. Boom. And he had to be a boxer.
Yeah.
And he had to be trained.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I had gotten hit so many times in such a small amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like firecrackers going on my face.
Man.
I mean, he was pop, 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 boom. And I hit my ear and I'm like, I couldn't hear now. Nose is all lit.
That's definitely a good combination.
And he was shaking.
Yeah.
But it wasn't so much to where I was getting shook.
Yeah.
I don't know what was going on.
It was probably just a setup before the
Yeah. And I'm just kind of throwing. But that was definitely I got beat up. There was something that happened where, you know, this gang member, rival, you know, was using like the N-word, but mm-hmm. like the G-G-E-R.
Yeah.
And there was another individual that I think he might be getting out now, but he's doing about 25, 26 years. But he was one of like the bigger OGs mm-hmm. at the time from the Valley.
Ah.
And he was definitely a killer.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hearing the individual saying that. He was mm-hmm. like, oh, is that right? Is that how it goes? And I could just see like the already zeroed in. And there were some things that had occurred after, you know, certain situations just from that night.
Mm-hmm.
A younger individual, he got his jaw wired shut.
Mm.
He got from the side.
Wow.
I mean, a girl got stabbed. I mean, there was a lot of different things. It could have been way worse
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it was,
man.
What a night.
Wow.
What a night.
That's crazy, huh?
Oh, and then I had so much blood on my shirt, right? I had blood. It was a white Pro Club shirt, right?
Yeah.
So it was blood. I was leaking. An OG, he's an OG now, but he's from Crook City. But he's like, dang, blood. He's like, man, what's going on? He's like, hey, still. Here's my shirt, bud. Here's my shirt. He gave me his shirt. I'm like, oh, thanks, man. He's like, yeah, just your other shirt. Keep it on your nose, man. Keep your nose tight, man. You're leaking. I was like, oh, thanks, man.
That's funny. Yeah, you know, I'm wearing this red and blue. So I'm a blood cuz.
There we go.
were you ever hurt, bro? Like, I mean, you had a lot of close calls. Mm-hmm. You were involved in a lot of fights.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shootings involved.
Yep.
Were you ever hurt or hospitalized?
Yeah. I mean, actually on an occasion where we were in Las Vegas, right?
Las Vegas.
We moved there, me and the wife. And I had my young son at the time, Isaiah. And I don't think we had Alexis yet.
Hmm.
Actually, we may have just had Alexis. Yeah, we had Alexis too as well. And, yeah, it was just another night of drinking and we're just having a good time. I was hanging out with my buddy from Oceanside that had moved there too as well. Had a job with them in construction at the time. And then we had another individual that was an SA from Poway, from the hood out there. You know, I was like, man, I want to go to the strip.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they're like, man, still just do it. Let's hang out. I'm like, oh, let's go to the strip, man. Let's go hang out. And I didn't like gambling or anything like that, but I just like seeing the people and the energy and all that type of stuff. And so they were like, I finally talked them into it, right? So I didn't talk my homeboy from Oceanside there. He was like, nah, I'm gonna stay home. But I had the individual from Poway. He was like, yeah, let's go. So we go in the car, we're driving. And on our way to the strip, this car rolls up on the side of us. And it was fun. It was interesting because we didn't do anything to them. We didn't cut them off. We didn't do anything. And it was this girl and a guy. Now the girl was just driving, but the guy was just out there and he was just cussing. Right. Mm. And they were close enough to where he was cussing. He's like, you know, and I'm like, just put the window up. I'm like, I'm not going to deal with this innocent bystander. He must have thought we were someone else.
Ah.
And we both stop at the light.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, something hits the windshield.
Hmm.
Well, he had thrown a glass bottle and it cracked the windshield. I had blacked out at that point. I'm like, follow him, right?
Yeah.
So the dude that was, I was with, he was driving and he's, you know, started following him in my green, it was a 96 Jeep Cherokee and it had some pretty good get up. So we're following him and this guy's taking us through alleys. He's taking us through all these different places. Little did I know was he was taking us because he was from that area through different areas. So we wouldn't be able to kind of really see or understand or know where we were at. Maybe he was very smart, right? Yeah. Maybe we can make a call, you know? So somehow we end up at this, a lot of the different types of like strip malls or grocery stores, they'll have like poker bars there in Vegas, essentially. So when I got there, I just got out of the car and I started looking at my surrounding. I look up and I see the Palms, but we're not like right by the Palms because, you know, these hotels are huge, but I could just see the Palms there. So it might've been maybe a mile away or something like that. Just wanted to understand where my surroundings were at. I get out the car, homeboys, you know, he's, you know, still yelling and all that type of stuff. He's behind his, the, as he opens up the car door, he has something here, but I can't see behind, you know, through the car door, obviously. So I'm like, oh man, he might have a gun.
Oof.
Essentially, we were probably about like 15, 20 feet away from him. So he had a gun. We could maybe get back in the car. The other guy that was with me, he was still on the driver's seat, essentially. But then as he comes out, I see it's a golf club. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm cool with the golf club. Yeah. Well, I don't know what I was thinking, right? Like, oh, I think I'm Bruce Lee. I kicked off. It doesn't matter about that, right?
Yeah, it's fine.
So he comes out and he's just like, somehow now we're like really close and he's swinging it and I can kind of hear it. And I'm just kind of like, trying to, it's almost like, you know, remember the double dutch back in the day? So you kind of find your way in there and he's swinging it. And I'm just kind of like doing one of these numbers. And then he kind of steps back and I'm just sitting there bracing and he whistles.
Oh no, he did that. Bro, not the whistle.
Four or five dudes come out of the bar. One of them security. So I'm thinking like, what's going on? I'm still wondering what's going on. It's weird, right? I'm still wondering what's going on. I know it's something not right, but I see security.
This guy's golfing. He's trying to bring me up. What's happening here? Tiger Woods type of guy.
So now it's starting to really dawn on me like they're going to jump us. But it's only like five of them, right? Plus him.
Yeah.
And it's us too. So there might be some sort of chance, essentially, right? But the dude that's from Poway, nothing against Poway, but I don't know. But anyways, he comes
out. You're going to bash him right now.
I know. Poway's a great area, right? Shout out to Poway. Poway's beautiful. I love it. But the individual that I was with, I don't know, man, he got out the car. I was like, hey man, we got to do that. And he just was like, it's like, he almost had saw like a ghost. And that's where I knew like he wasn't with it.
He wasn't a rider.
He wasn't a rider. I'm like, oh man. But I'm like, hey, this is Oceanside.
Okay.
Let's go. Right?
Yeah.
So as he's trying to run away, homeboy caught him with the golf club. Bam, right in his head. He just, all I seen is him hit the ground like that. And I roll up on the dude and I'm trying to like, you know, trying to get close to him so I could swing on him. And then just like that, wham, I got hit from the side. I come down to a knee. And when I got hit in my jaw, it was so crisp to where it was, I felt like it was lights out for a moment.
Okay.
So I remember hitting my knee on the street and then all of a sudden, guy gets up behind me and he's got me in a rear naked.
Oh,
he's already got the hooks in.
What do you mean hooks?
So he's got his legs.
Does jiu-jitsu stuff.
Yeah. So he's got his legs. He's already like this on top. Yeah.
What the? Okay.
And now I'm on the ground and I'm going in and out. And as I'm going in and out, I'm looking down and all I see is a dude just like, but just
wait, he was stabbing you?
Yeah.
Bro.
Super precise though. He just, and so when he hit me the first time, my body jerked and I turned around while the guy was on me.
Yeah.
And then I felt something in the back of my leg. Oh. So he got me in the back of my leg.
Dang.
And I turned back around again and then he goes right back in the stomach again. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking as I'm getting choked, blood's coming down everywhere. I'm getting, I got hit in the nose with the golf club. Hit in the ear. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm gonna die. This is my last night.
Wow.
And, but there was, it was weird. It was a peace. Now it wasn't a peace from the Lord. Mm-hmm. It was a peace from the enemy.
Yeah.
That was going to take me under, to hell. But I almost felt like, because I was so carnal for so many years, I almost felt like this is the way that it needs to have happened.
Yeah. You're not thinking about your kids. You're not thinking about your wife.
Not at all.
Nothing.
And the reason why I wasn't thinking about them, because I was so, what's the word? In remorse, regret for all the things that I had done, and that they would be better off without me.
Oof. Do you think a lot of people are feeling that way?
Absolutely. I think that there's a lot of people that carry burdens. And it's a lot of different types of wounds that have happened, trauma. And so they're at a point where they're just saying, hey, you know what? Like, there's no reason for me to be here. There's no more worth, essentially. If I go right now.
Like, people are thinking my family's going to be better off if I'm gone.
Yeah, I believe that 100%.
Wow, a lot of that's people. What people are thinking. Wow.
And so, having that feeling and kind of being in that thought process, that mindset, man, it was tough. But as I was going in and out of consciousness, because here I am getting choked, getting stabbed, getting beat with the golf club, the body is just pretty much saying, hey, I don't want to take this anymore. I'm shut down. Yeah. Right. I could hear a girl screaming, you're going to kill him. You're going to kill him. And it was in and out. Kill him. Kill him. And literally the dude let go. Someone must call the cops. And that she saved my life, essentially. That girl, and it was the same girl that was driving that car. But I just remember, you know, in the aftermath, after everything was done, right? Like, that same dude that I was with, it was almost like it was a reflex of kind of growing up. And here's the thing, I never was from a gang, essentially, right? But I was taught a lot by gang members, what to do, what to say, how to do things. And so it was just a reflex to go, I don't know, officer. I don't know what happened. I don't know what, who, what?
I got stabbed.
Got blood all over my
trip.
Yeah. Because it's like, hey, we're going to come back and we're going to get these individuals, you know?
It's that process.
But this other guy, I mean, I could already tell, man, I mean, he would have been a witness at the stand.
Oh, for sure.
So it's kind of like, I told him, hey, man, hey, just don't even worry about it. Don't even say anything. I'll go ahead and talk. Okay. So yeah, police came. They tried to take me in. I don't know, not take me into jail, but they were trying to take me in the trauma unit, right? They're like, hey, you're literally bleeding. My shirt was soaked with blood, right? I mean, it was just, it was dripping. It was soaking. I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm good. And once they had left, our car was still there, right? We got back in the car. I stopped off at the liquor store, got 2 Old English 40 ounces. And the cashier looked at me. He was like, hey, I'm going to call. I need to call Care Matt. I was like, nah.
Whoa.
Don't even call. I'm good. And he was like, okay. And you still give him the money, right? They're the owner.
So you were stabbed multiple times. Yeah. Somebody's grabbing you in a chokehold. Yet, right after, you went to a liquor store and started drinking.
What the? The logic. And then I wake up, because I guess what ended up happening, I got dropped off at my apartment, and Nicole wasn't living with me at the time. Nicole had left because she was, you know, tired of just the craziness, right? So she had moved back to Oceanside. Mm-hmm. But it was a childhood friend, essentially, had came over to the house. And I could hear her, and she's like, I think he's dead. Mm. And I bled out pretty much a lot of it out on the couch. And then that's where I had went to the trauma unit after that.
You survived.
Survived, yeah. I think I'm still here.
He's a dead man walking. Dang, bro. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I'm surprised you survived that, man.
It's interesting, man. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
And, yeah, I mean, and then one other, I mean, you know, one other thing that had happened is I had, this was in Carlsbad out of all places, mm-hmm. La Costa. Mm-hmm.
La Costa.
And this was probably, I had just moved back to Oceanside.
Mm-hmm.
Had still hadn't quit drinking after these couple of different occasions. There's a party going on and I'm like, oh, it's La Costa. They're going to probably have all the big time drinks and all mm-hmm. that stuff. And when you know, when we get in, I mean, we're coming to like a mini mansion, right? Wow. And these kids, I mean, literally, I mean, a lot of squares, you know what I mean? And, but there was just like alcohol, like $50 bottles of alcohol, $100 bottles of alcohol, $500 bottles of alcohol. I mean, and I'm just like, what is going on? I've never seen stuff like
this. Yeah.
I've seen it maybe on the rap videos.
Right. Because you're used to the OEs,
of
the
40s,
counting. Okay.
Yeah, like, you know, cheap brandy, you know what I mean? Maybe some Thunderbird if you can get it, you know what I mean? But like, like Mad Dog 2020, you know what I mean? But now I remember sitting here like, what is going on here? And, you know, a big thing that, you know, really drove us to as well was the music mm-hmm. at the time.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, I mean, you're listening to, you know, NWA,
Eazy-E,
you know, Dog Pound.
Tupac,
you know what I mean? Tupac, Bone Thugs of Harmony, you know what I mean?
Not like, too much Biggie. Not too much.
No. That was that East Coast, West Coast.
We couldn't do that.
You know what I mean? But yeah, that Juicy by Biggie was pretty good.
That was pretty good. Going back to Cali, right?
Yeah. He came with some tracks though.
Yeah, for sure.
But you couldn't tell that. You couldn't tell your friends that though, right? Because it's West Coast versus East Coast. But yeah, man. I mean, we're at the party and really just like speed things up is that there was some individuals that had came into the party and they had like boots, had red laces, you know, white boys and everything like that. I didn't think anything of it. I thought they were some
skaters maybe.
Yeah, skaters for whatever reason. I mean, you know, and I was already kind of drunk and everything. And there's only like one other black dude there.
Yeah.
Super square, you know, like he's wearing Tommy Hilfiger, you know.
Okay, yeah.
You know, these guys, right? So he's coming down the stairs and he accidentally bumps into a white girl. And he's like, I am so sorry, you know? And then he ends up, you know, coming to the, you know, to the girl.
Oh, I think. Pizza.
Well, the kids.
Oh, thank you.
I shared one, an Alexis. And there's about enough for 3 slices each one of you guys.
Oh, okay, cool.
Good. Right. Thank you. I went to the store.
Yeah. And so
we got pizza, guys.
Yeah, we got pizza. Yeah. We're ready. Ready.
What is it? Delicious pizza.
Oh man, so this is delicious pizza.
Pizza we got here
from.
We can't promote them yet. Oh, it's really good. All right,
that looks good.
See you later. Like you were just
so we get the party in it and he accidentally bumps into this white girl.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm so sorry. You know? And she wasn't thinking anything. I was like, wasn't even a part of it. She's like, oh, okay, yeah. And those white dudes was like, you better be sorry, you NIGGER.
Ooh.
So it just turned up really, really quick.
Fast.
Another buddy that I had, he was actually from Upsole.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't there from there at the time from there, but he was from, you know, ended up being from there.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm with him, a couple of other guys, and we're just fighting. Mm-hmm. And then they ended up, you know, we started fighting them and they go out the front door.
Mm-hmm.
They run in their car and they're like, we'll be back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking like in La Casa, like, we'll be back like that. No, I,
what's that mean? Yeah.
Now in Oceanside, if you hear that, then you're like, okay, we need to get our stuff
out of here.
Mm-hmm. Or get ready, whichever one. But I was like, they're not gonna come back. So we're drinking, and it must have been an hour or two later they came back.
Oh.
And my buddy, that I was with, he was already very crafty, and he was like, hey, they're back. He's like, you know, let's go in the bushes and all that type of stuff. And he's like, we'll just wait for them, and then you know, get them after that. So I was like, okay, yeah, listen to him go in the bushes and everything like that. And it's like four or five of us in the bushes and I couldn't wait. So I run out of the bushes and I'm running towards this car, like a four-door hatchback. And there's a guy in the front seat, the window's down, and I'm swinging on him in the front seat. And then the back window comes down, and then boom, double barrel shotgun. And it's right there. And literally I just moved out the way.
Boom.
Oh. Shot. I'm on my back. And I'm like, I knew I wasn't hit, but I'm like, oh no, I can't go out anywhere.
Yeah.
This guy's gonna come up and just boom, and have my head all over the pavement. And they drove off. And I was like, I'm still here.
Damn.
So that was just nuts. It was crazy. That's but that was nuts. a culmination of those types of things that were happening. Finally, I got me to a point a couple of months maybe later where I was like, I need to get into a rehab because I'm just going to get killed. Like for some reason, like for me, I'm just out here almost like, even though I never wore a pink shirt.
Yeah.
Never in my life. But essentially it was like, I was had this bright shirt on that everyone could see and was like, let's get that guy.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like, man, I'll be dead here pretty quickly. So
that's crazy. So went to rehab.
Yeah.
And then what happened right after?
Yeah. So I went to a Calvary Ranch out there in Lakeside. And that was just a very, very kind of like, it was awe inspiring, kind of interesting experience. It's only 30 days essentially, but the way that they had it set up as far as their structures, their systems, it was like you're in the word early, you were journaling, you had to clean up your room. And what they were really teaching you was routine, you know? And you had to journal. There's a certain scriptures that you were reading. You worked out on the farm. First time I've ever worked out on a farm before. So I'm working with pigs.
Yeah.
I'm working with horses. Working with goats. I mean, all this craziness, chickens and all this stuff. And, you know, cleaning up the stalls and kind of like becoming friends with horses or seeing different types of horses. They have funny personalities, man. Some horses that'll kick you real quick. Some that'll come up to you. But it was just interesting. And the guys that I was, you know, kind of learning from too as well. We would have Bible study every single day at the end of the day while we had dinner.
Wow.
And we had huge dinners. And I remember one of the pastors saying that he was talking about the blaspheme of the Holy Spirit using the Lord's name pretty much in vain, essentially. And he talks about that, I think, in the Gospels, somewhere around there. I was like, oh my gosh, I've done that so many times where I use the Lord's name in vain. And it says, you're going to go to hell, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my God. And I was just like, I didn't even know. I was scared to go ask, but I didn't want to keep it in. I got up and I said, hey, I've done the blaspheme of the Holy Spirit multiple times. He's like, what do you mean? And I said, I mean, what you were conveying in there, I'm like, am I going to go to hell? He's like, are you still alive right now? I said, yeah. He's like, so you haven't blasphemed the Holy Spirit, right? Blaspheme of the Holy Spirit means that you're not believing in Jesus Christ, that he's the death, he's the resurrection, he's the burial, and things of that nature, and that he rose from the dead.
Yeah.
He's like, do you believe in that? I said, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, then you're good.
Mm.
Man, so there was a huge relief, and there was starting to be like, although there was still a lot more shackles to break.
Right.
And bondages.
So you repented from your sins.
Correct.
Accept the Lord, but you were like, I'm still going to go to hell. So you needed clarity.
Right? Correct. Yeah.
Got it.
And just kind of hearing what he was saying, I just, you know, but it's interesting how you can misinterpret, right?
Yeah.
You don't have the knowledge.
Of course.
But once I had heard that I was fine and I was good and I just needed to kind of change my life.
Yeah.
And repent and change, do a 180. That's where I was like, oh wow. So that's where I made the shift.
Wow. That's a powerful story, guys. Deep story. I'm surprised you're still alive. Tell me about the next chapter of your life. I know a lot happened. You transitioned, you started serving, you started going to church. You started being a leader of your house.
Yeah.
Everything started changing. And then you started a business.
Right.
So, man, okay, let's go.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was powerful, because I when I came back to the Lord, I ended up working for a church, Christian Fellowship at the time. Yeah. And it was just a mega church in our city. And I was able to kind of look from behind the scenes doing janitorial work and kind of seeing how everybody worked there. And it was just like, I was just so blown away. I was so amazed and just seeing the work of the Lord. One day, cleaning toilets, but in the same day, they would all get us in the van and say, hey, we need to pray for these individuals. They're high on drugs. We're going to go out there and we're going to evangelize. We're going to do these. Yeah. I'm like, what is going on here? And that's where I started to kind of really understand, like, you know, how to communicate one-on-one, small group, in a big group setting. I really started to kind of understand how to connect with different types of personalities. Oof. Seeing people that were, down and out, all the way to people that were living up in the hills, but still down and out, right? Able to like pray and speak into their lives, being a part of like the creative, like we'd have a creative time with, different types of pastors and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And we would sit and they would be talking about different types of plans or different types of maybe systems that could be created or ministries that can be created. And so I was just like, I came alive, man. Yeah. I was just love the ministry, man. Yeah. I was just so powerful. And, starting off early in the morning and literally going till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. Oof. And not wanting even to go home because it was just so much. I was just
so alive.
It was such a great experience. And it just a huge learning curve too, as well. I remember one time the pastor had told me, he was like, hey, I need you to go ahead and start, becoming the leader of the junior high and high school. Mm. Didn't say pastor, but the leader. And I'm oh my God, what the heck? Like, I never, spoke in front of people. Yeah. In fact, when I was in college in my speech class, I remember just bombing on a speech. Mm. I got up there, I didn't say anything. and here he was telling me that I want you to come in there and I want you to start preaching. Yeah. And that was just like, whoa. And I remember the night before that I did my first preaching, I was so scared, man. Mm. I was so scared. I was just praying, Lord.
That's crazy. You weren't scared of being out there fighting, being stabbed, but you were scared of preaching.
Isn't it just, it's weird. It's weird how
does that make sense? Or
how the mind works. I don't know. It's nuts. I just remember like the night before I was sitting there and I was looking at a picture and I was praying, in the spirit. And I'm just sitting there and I'm crying and my wife comes up.
I'm listening to this.
What are you doing? What are you crying for? And I thought I was looking at my son's picture. And I said, it's Isaiah. And I'm just praying over his life. And he was only probably like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years old at the time. Whatever, right? And the picture was him. Like, I thought it was him at 1 year old. And she was like, fool. She was like, this is our nephew. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh man.
So it was wild.
Oh man.
But that really taught me business. What I mean? Like, man. I mean, in general, like, how to be around people. So I had gotten into kind of like the supplement business, proteins and fish oils and all these different types. And I was working at a nutrition zone and I was actually working there with my buddy, Jimmy. And there was a couple of other individuals that I was working with too, as well. And, it was just a great time of just learning how to sell, learning how to give value.
Yeah.
And one of my mentors that actually owned the nutrition zone at the time, he was always like, he said, you just want to give people value. You don't want to give them more than what they really need. He's like, there's no such thing as like, why would you sell ice to an Eskimo? An Eskimo already knows how to get ice.
Makes sense.
You want to give them something that they need that they didn't know that they needed, essentially. And I remember my mentor at that time, in business at the time, everything was just so like, he's so much into personal development. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was always reading some sort of book and always giving me a book and, quizzing me on the book. And, and I remember him gave me a book called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And I remember reading that, and that kind of opened me up to where kind of like starting to visualize, see things. Another book called Psycho Cybernetics by Dr. Maxwell Maltz. You know, Crush It by Gary Vee, the first Crush It. And there was just a lot of different, How to Win and Influence People. Just a lot of different books I was reading. It just really opened me up that I'm like, and I didn't even like reading, but I loved reading these books for whatever reason. I mean, I counted the books as I could read in high school, right? I mean, maybe read one or two books, but there I'm like, wow, I couldn't get enough of finding out people's personalities, giving them value. And so I had gotten so good at sales at that point because I had opened up a boot camp too as well, which was a free boot camp down on the beach. And here I was like selling supplements at the back of my trunk, selling them at the front of the pier, training people. Then I started turning it into like a business as far as like it's a free, but it was almost kind of like a free funnel, right? You know,
those And then the back like a free end of the webinar, funnel. You get their data, you start dripping them. Got it. That's crazy because I remember attending a few of your boot camps, and you were known for that in Oceanside, right? Going to the pier. I remember one time seeing, I think, more than 100 people on a Saturday morning working out. Afterwards, you giving a speech. I'm like, this is dope.
Bro, man, it was just amazing, like what the Lord did, what he was doing,
and you're how inspiring he's using communities.
Just using, I mean, being able to use me, I mean, an individual. I remember sitting at the top of the stairs and just be like trembling. And they're like, Lord, you're having me. I mean, you're going to have to show up here because I don't know what's going to go on right now. You know, and I come and sure enough, it would be, you know, something for them to, I guess, come back the next week, right? It just got bigger and it got bigger and it got bigger.
Man.
But yeah, I mean, that's the business. I mean, I think mentors are so important. Mm-hmm. They're so critical because you can tell them things, that dreams that you have, right? That they can facilitate and actually say, hey, yeah, you could do this and you could even do more.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe the nucleus or the group of people that I was around before, I would tell them, be like, you're a weirdo. Like, why would you even think that? Yeah. Like, no, you just need to go get a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
What's wrong with a 9-to-5, essentially? Yeah. However, you know, it's just super unorthodox how I got into the gym setting, how I got in. I mean, usually you have people that would have like maybe a kinesiology degree to become a trainer, or maybe they had some sort of multiple certificates. Yeah. And I remember having trainers come to our workout, and I didn't have any certificate, but they were coming there to ask me how I was running, how I started my business.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow.
That's crazy.
And it was those books, How to Win and Influence People, you know, Psycho Cybernetics, like visualizing the outcomes before they come, actually having to take action though too as well. This is not like some woo-woo stuff.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
People perish because of lack of vision, says that word. But yeah, that's kind of how the businesses essentially started. And so we had a gym that was called the Way of Life Bootcamp. We ran that gym for about seven, 8 years. Became a Amazon best-selling author. And there was a lot of great things that ended up kind of, coming out of that. And we had gotten that to a time where we had to dissolve the gym. Essentially, I wasn't able to sell it, but we dissolved it. You know, it ended up going into about, although it was a smashing success in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
There was a lot of failure in it too as well. We were close to about $100,000 in debt. My partner, which was a great partner, he had got burned out with gyms. He was already had probably about a 15 year career in gyms, maybe close to 20 years, somewhere around there. I was only about 8 or 9 years into it and just kind of getting started. And, but he ended up kind of like not wanting to do it anymore. And so that kind of left a real big gap essentially because he was, super talented.
Yeah.
And he was kind of like essentially the yin to the yang, right? Like what he did was much different from what I did. And we kind of really worked together on things. So, once that started dissolved, I created a marketing agency just out of desperation. That ended up, for gyms, it ended up really blowing up. And then we got it into 100 different locations. And then from those locations, because they were prominent in the boutique boot camp type of setting, essentially that niche, then other boutique boot camps wanted to get in with what we were doing. We started running ads. That started to really kind of flourish.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how it is being an entrepreneur, right? Like those massive ups and downs, right? And you know, the family's coming along with you on those types of things. And so I didn't know that my wife was like really getting tired of my 16 to 18 hour days. I was tired too, but I wasn't tired of wanting giving up. I wasn't even thinking about giving up. I'm like, I'm going to keep on grinding.
Keep going, at this keep going. Thing. We, you know, when we get big deals, we celebrate. Let's go out with some steak. Let's have everything, appetizers, dessert. Let's have it all.
And then we have, you want some too?
You want some too?
I don't even know you, but we'll buy you some.
We're paying for them too. Yeah, so that's up at night, right?
Yeah.
And then whenever you get like another big deal, it's like, yeah, this time around, probably going to celebrate. Just going to McDonald's or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some In-N-Out, no fries though.
Protein burger.
Protein burger.
Don't even put the bread on it.
Oh, man. That's awesome. But then you transitioned recently to these past couple of years.
Yeah.
And something else, right?
Remote sales.
Remote sales.
Mm-hmm. And I had no idea like what it really was. In fact, my agency was starting to kind of dissolve. I put my last, I think, 10 grand into ads.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hold up. So we just heard a story, right? And then the transition, the transformation, then you became an entrepreneur, right? Now you're spending $10,000 in ads.
Yes. Yeah. That's, it's just,
hold up. Like, wow. Okay. So what is the thought process? Like, how do you just spend $10,000 in ads? Because that's not normal talk for a lot of people.
Yeah. You know, I had just gotten so used to like understanding. I mean, I didn't know how to run traffic essentially, but putting it in the hands of individuals that knew how to run traffic, get leads, what we would call.
Yeah.
To come in on the front end of a funnel to have like a video overview of like what you're doing because you're targeting that type of niche. They come and they put their name, email, cell phone contact, and they fill out an application on job form. Mm-hmm. You see exactly what the reasoning behind why they're coming in.
Yeah.
And so now you've got this warm lead that has already been, you know, preconditioned through the overviews, the videos, and now they're coming on with you to go ahead and make the sale. And so I just knew like the sale that I had at that point was a $5,000 sale and a $10,000 sale from our marketing agency. And then we had a $15,000 sale. Yeah. But if I put $10,000 in, I did one sale of $10,000. I already made my money back.
Boom.
Now, if I do another $15,000, then I'm, you know, I'm plus, you know, 15,
right?
15. These high ticket type of a sale, essentially, you can make your money back really, really quickly. And you could double, you could triple, you quadruple, maybe 1,000x if you really want to.
Mm-hmm.
So, but for whatever reason, there wasn't really any sales that were really going on at that point. I was, you know, on that last credit card, and I had some partners at the time where we were just kind of having some falling outs. I won't go into too deep of details on that, but I was coming on to actually that meeting to fire them essentially. And it was one of the hardest things that to do because, you know, I know I needed to, but I was like, I've got a family to feed. It was a very unhealthy relationship.
Yeah.
But it was a relationship that I wanted to continue to foster because there was still money coming in, although they were taking money too as well. I remember coming onto that actual meeting and it was a blessing in disguise. It's amazing how the Lord works. But on that same meeting, they introduced me to this individual named Steve Lyman. And with Steve, they were saying, hey, he's going to go ahead and take over the sales because they knew that there was a lot of pressure on me to be able to do sales and then now coach people on the fulfillment, you know, the client, and that he'll come in. And I was like, oh, Steve, tell us a little bit about yourself. And so Steve's like, yeah, I've been in, you know, the remote sales, digital marketing for the last, you know, 13, 14 years. I've had 8-figure companies. You know, I've been, you know, worked alongside Russell Brunson when he was first starting ClickFunnels, all these different types of things. I'm like, oh man, wow. I'm like, how did we get this guy? You know? And he's like, yeah, how much are you doing in revenue right now? I said, well, we do anywhere between like 30 to 50 grand in revenue a month. He's like, oh, okay. He said, just give me about 90 days. I'll get that to 300 grand mm-hmm. in revenue with two sales guys. All I need you to do is just give them 15%. Mm-hmm. I'll get 20% off of any sales that I do. And you guys just keep the rest mm-hmm. and just promise us that you just pour in ads and get enough leads for these guys to be full time. Cause it's like, I feel like you guys have an amazing offer, especially in the fitness industry.
So cool.
Oh, it's like, and I came off of that and it was just like a breath of new life. So mm-hmm. here I was coming into a meeting to dissolve everything once again, mm-hmm. but yet I got a breath of new life.
Yeah.
So
second win.
And that's kind of how it is with entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
It's just nuts. Like,
yeah.
Right when you think you might want to throw in the towel, it's like something pops up.
Boom. And you're
like, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just fired up now, almost doing, feeling like I could do a backflip. But you know,
can you do better?
And the company, man, I mean, it still ended up going down. Now Steve already had like multiple files because he was, you know, had his own business. He was managing a ton of different types of files. Had, you know, hundreds of kind of sales guys and sales gals under him on a lot of different files.
Mm-hmm.
And he had no idea that we had totally slowed down, right?
Yeah.
He's just focused on other files. So he came up to me and he, out of nowhere, he's like, hey man, he's like, I already know you can sell.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I got an e-commerce file that, mm-hmm. You know, I would like for you to kind of look into if you like to
mm-hmm.
do a part-time, you get 15% of the commission. I was like, oh, 15%. I was like, so how much is the sell? He's like, oh yeah. So you got a $5,000 and a $10,000. I'm like, 15% of 10,000. That's 1500 mm-hmm. off of one call. I'm like going nuts. I'm like trying to put the numbers together.
Yeah.
I'm like, because a lot of the money that I was doing in my business was super elusive because there was a lot of people that were paying out. By the time I got the money, it was really nothing, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. Okay. So I could like take, I could do like 5, 6, 7 sales and I can already pretty much take home more than what I'm getting out of the revenue from my actual business. And so I mean, I wasn't ever really essentially good at math. I'm getting better.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, that's all I need to know. And I was like, so what's e-commerce? And he just gives me like the video sales letter.
Yeah, yeah.
He says, study it for the weekend.
Mm.
And then we'll put you on the phones on Monday.
Mm.
I'm like, okay,
like bet.
Mm. And it was interesting because I put a lot of pressure on myself. But once I just kind of started looking at it, I didn't even know what e-commerce was. Mm-hmm. But I just started looking at it as more or less like, I'm just coaching these people.
Mm. That's it.
Yeah. And so I got on the call, did my script, I start coaching the people, and then all of a sudden.
Yeah, by coaching, you mean like you're guiding them, you are, in a sense, guiding them to be better, to do better. You're obviously making that connection, you're pushing them, you're being a friend, a coach. Walk me through that.
Coaching them past their fears, right? Because I think the biggest fear is for anybody is investing in their self.
Mm.
Right. And
people buy houses, cars, all kinds of stuff. But what do you mean by investing in themselves? Is that different?
Yeah, it is different. It's different in the sense of like investing in your own skill set, because you can only go as far in life as the development that's inside of you, right? Personal development.
Yeah. But mm-hmm. the skills are not tangible. Mm-hmm. Like you buy a car, it's tangible, right?
Yeah.
But skills are not.
That's right.
So I think a lot of people get stuck with that because they're like, okay, I could buy something.
Yeah.
Like invest in the stock market, buy real estate, right? It's a tangible asset.
Preach.
But a skill, it's not.
Yeah.
But the ROI just depends on several factors, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Are you leveraging the skill? Do you have the right system in place? Are you working for the right company? Tell me more about that. Let's unpack that a little bit more.
Preach. Yeah, man. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's exactly what you're conveying mm-hmm. as far as like that skill, because mm-hmm. it's not something that you can absolutely touch,
mm-hmm.
but what it's building up inside of you is what is able to now give you the opportunity to do things that you never thought you could do. It pulls things out of you, right? Mm. Like, so if you get better at communication,
mm-hmm.
right? Or if you get better at sales, you get better at marketing. So when you invest yourself in these types of areas, right? Mm. Marketing, sales, I mean, this takes you to a whole another level, right?
Got it. So this is different than getting a 4-year degree.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
it's completely different.
Yeah. Huh. This is where you can, you know, 5X, 10X. I mean, I remember having one time having more money come in a month than what I had made in a whole year prior. And I just sat there and go, what just happened? I just didn't understand, like, why, how, what, other than there was a skill that I was able to cultivate all the way from working at the church and continuing to work on those skills, you know, through the gyms. And then all of a sudden I was put in an area with a high ticket opportunity in remote sales. And then it culminated by the end of the month because of that skill set to put me at a point where, you know, I was making what an average salary would be for someone in a year in 1 month.
Oof.
And I'm just like, almost about, I felt like I was going to fall over.
That's crazy.
Seeing the money get wired into the account, blown away.
Yeah. And that's crazy. So as we land the plane here, I mean, somebody that is hearing the podcast and was probably raised in the hood and, you know, has experienced similar things to, you know, to you, man, that's inspiring to know that you came from the hood with all these experiences, right? Not to what you're doing right now. That's crazy. Major inspiration.
Thank you, brother.
Major. What is a message that you want to give to the youth? And, you know, maybe something that you could share with them to motivate them, to get them to maybe be better, do better.
Yeah, man, I want to, you know, really let them know that, like, all the people, the places, the things that they're in right now, these are all things that are a part of them and their skills that are being created inside of them, right? And these types of situations and circumstances that they're going through, it's not going to return void, right? What I would tell them though too as well is that an important thing to really learn in life is that you can either learn by yourself actually doing, or you can learn from what others have done as well.
Powerful.
Right. And I think it's important to go out and go do things, but things that you already understand that are going to hurt you. Like, there's no reason why I should be alive right now. God spared me. Jesus spared me. And so essentially that's the reason why I'm here and able to be able to speak and do that now. But for you, like, you know, watching this, if you're going through those same situations and putting yourself in those same situations, you might not make it till tomorrow and it'll be done, you know? So what I would ask is that you would just learn from me, right? And learn from, the things that, you know, were the wrong things. And just, you know, simply, you know, take actions and things that are going to fill you, fulfill you and put you in a place where you're going to be able to really, flourish.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's awesome. It's amazing, bro. Boy, bro, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, brother.
This is great, man. Appreciate We're going to have you again very soon.
Go time.
With that being said, like, share, subscribe, all that. We're going to have you back pretty soon. I'm excited. And again, thank you so much for sharing. Remember, keep fighting the good fight. Stay in prayer. Stay dangerous. Till next time. We're
Hit
out.
That notification bell. That Rodriguez show. Yeah, that Rodriguez show.